So we're reading today from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila, chapter 16, verses 103 to 107. So I'll just read the first few verses. I think 107 is on the board. Yes. So we'll just read the translations. Text 103. I am not even fit to be your disciple. Therefore, kindly do not take seriously whatever childish impudence I have shown. So this is a conversation between the Digvijay Pandit, Keshav Kashmiri, and Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya is now speaking to him after defeating him in a philosophical discussion. Text 104. Please go back home, and tomorrow we may meet again, so that I may hear discourses on the Shastras from your mouth. 105. In this way, both the poet and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went back to their homes. And at night, the poet worshipped Mother Saraswati. In a dream, the goddess informed him of the Lord's position. And the poetic champion could understand that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. That brings us to 107. On the next morning, the poet came to Lord Chaitanya and surrendered unto his lotus feet. The Lord bestowed his mercy upon him and cut off all his bondage to material attachment. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The same process advocated by Lord Sri Krishna in his teachings of Bhagavad Gita as it is, surrender unto me in all instances, was advocated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The champion surrendered unto the Lord, and the Lord favored him. One who is favored by the Lord is freed from material bondage, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mam eti sarjana. End of purport. Om jnanati mirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshulandantam yena tasmai shri krame namah. This is one of the famous pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's, where he delivers all sorts of people who initially may have been totally unqualified to receive his mercy. Now in this pastime, this great Digvijay Pandit, Digvijay one who conquers different directions through some form of expertise, in his case scholarship, had been traveling around the country, challenging different persons to debates, and specifically focused on expertise in composition of Sanskrit with poetic and grammatical considerations. So he had come to Navadvip Dham, and the devotees there had decided to ask Nimai Pandit to have this verbal wrestle with him, so that if he lost, well, it wouldn't matter because he was a young boy. And then they would have another chance to defeat him afterwards if it went wrong. But on the other hand, if the Lord managed to defeat this great conquering pandit, then it would put them in an even bigger standing. A mere boy from our village can defeat this great pandit. How good, how much more impressive would that seem? So that was their plan. And this is really the end of that whole debate, where Keshav Kashmiri composes many verses fluently on the Mother Ganga. And his recitation is so fast, so perfect, that no one can even really pick up the words. However, Lord Chaitanya has identified certain flaws in some of the verses in the middle. And the Keshav Kashmiri Pandit is completely amazed. How is it that this young boy who has hardly completed his studies and is simply undergoing a few grammatical gymnastics, how can he even remember the verses I've spoken? So anyway, the pastime proceeds and we've been hearing about that. And Lord Chaitanya essentially brings this Brahmana, this Pandit, to a point of accepting that there is a power beyond him. Up until now he has remained undefeated. But Lord Chaitanya, through this incident, has made him realize that actually I cannot do anything. And on his attempts to answer the challenges of Lord Chaitanya, he was unable to say a word. So this Brahmana has gone home, and obviously the source of his power was Mother Saraswati. Sri Sri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki. And Mother Saraswati, of course, we know of her as the goddess of learning, but we also know her to be manifestation of the internal potency of the Lord, that potency which allows devotees to come into contact with Shastra also. So we also recite when we speak on the Bhagavatam, Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Saraswatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudirayat. So we do pray for the blessings of Mother Saraswati, that original potency of the Lord, through whose mercy we can actually speak and absorb Shastra. But on this occasion, from the Brahmana's understanding or his pastime, Mother Saraswati did not appear on demand as he was accustomed, and he was unable to answer the questions posed by Lord Chaitanya. So it's described here that at night, after Lord Chaitanya asked him to go and take rest and continue the discussions the following morning, he went home and he started chanting the mantra that he would chant to please Saraswati Devi. And then, surely enough, he fell asleep at a certain point and she appeared to him. And then she spoke some very profound words to him. She mentioned to him, "Do not be too upset with what has happened. You have actually achieved the success of your life today. The success of your life is not that you have obtained this title of Digvijay, that you have conquered all directions, that you have defeated so many scholars and you have become so knowledgeable and vastly learned. The perfection of your life is that today you were defeated by the Lord. This is the Lord Himself. He is the Supreme Lord of everything that there is. He is the source of all creation. From Him everything emanates. There is no shame in being defeated by Him." And she also went on to explain this doubt that Keshav Kashmiri had in his mind. He said, "Up until now, you have never failed to appear on the tip of my tongue when I wanted to recite. What happened on this occasion?" He was thinking like this. And so she mentioned, "This Supreme Lord, Lord Chaitanya, is none other than my Lord and my Master. I cannot, out of a sense of chastity and basic respect, appear before Him and challenge Him in that manner." So as soon as Lord Chaitanya was, as soon as Lord Chaitanya spoke those words which put you into perplexity, it was not my position to come before Him and attempt to explain the truth. He is the person who can bewilder everyone. He can bewilder all the demigods, Lord Brahma, Lord Indra, Lord Shiva. What to speak of every single person in this world? So what to speak of me? I am simply His servant. So with this beautiful explanation, this explanation isn't given so much here in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's really covered in just one line. It says, "In this way both the poet and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went back to their own homes, and at night the poet worshipped Mother Saraswati." And in the next verse it explains she informed him of the Lord's position. So she also explained to him that he should not reveal this secret to anyone, because it was a part of the Lord's pastimes that his actual position and his glories were to be kept confidential from anyone who had not earned the right to understand those pastimes. And the Lord revealed His glories on a few occasions, but at certain times of His choosing. So this beautiful pastime, this story is described more in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, where a lot of more detail is given on some of the beautiful interactions of this and later pastimes. The Chaitanya Bhagavat largely contains very poetic, beautiful descriptions of the Lord's earlier pastimes, especially His pastimes as a student, as a young boy, arguing with everyone, defeating everyone. And the Chaitanya Charitamrita, as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains, contains those sections which have not been already elaborately described by Vrindavandas Thakur in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. So he has really summarized these episodes very, very quickly. Because the main nectar that we take from the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the very, very solid philosophical development of Lord Chaitanya's tattva, of the tattva of devotional service, and especially his later pastimes in Nilachal. So specifically Chaitanya Charitamrita focuses on those aspects. But some of the earlier pastimes, the beautiful, lovely stories of the Lord, his naughty behavior, that's described in more detail in the Chaitanya Bhagavat. So in this way, Mother Saraswati explains to him what the essence is, and he appears before Lord Chaitanya, as we read in this verse. He comes to Lord Chaitanya, and he does the right thing. He surrenders to him. There are some people who would, even after being defeated, not have the courage, not have the sensitivity to actually do the right thing. And that is to realize that I have been wrong, and to offer their obeisances to the Lord. But this Keshav Kashmiri, although we may speak of him in some jest, or we may mock his great prowess, etc., it may not be totally correct to do that, because somehow by the Lord's mercy, this person, through his sincere but in some way misguided effort at becoming an expert scholar, somehow was still brought to the point of meeting Lord Chaitanya. And meeting Lord Chaitanya is no standard privilege. It's not the case that anyone and everyone has the right, even after millions of births, to see Lord Chaitanya in his pastimes is a very rare privilege. So this Keshav Kashmiri, indeed anyone who has had the darshan of the Lord and has been chastised by the Lord even, is to be offered great respects. And it really sums up this point, that for the Lord to bestow mercy upon him, which he does in this verse, 107, he had to receive a certain type of behavior from Keshav Kashmiri. And that was putting aside his pride. And this pride is one component which the Lord has no interest in. Now, Keshav Kashmiri was a great scholar, he was a great worshipper of the Lord. He had studied a great deal, he knew the glories of the Lord, he knew the glories of Mother Ganga. And so that is all glorious. But the point at which we can take some slight issue, perhaps, is that he had developed a great deal of pride. And instead of seeing his great expertise, his scholarship, his ability as a means to serve the Lord, he had started to go around the country attempting to obtain pride, attempting to obtain recognition. Name, fame, recognition. These three things, which we all know, are completely destructive in the life of a devotee. And sadly, it is the tendency that whenever someone has some opulence, some ability, some skill, that pride based upon that skill tends to arrive soon after, or at some point. And here we are focusing on knowledge, the pride of learning. But the Lord himself, we know he's described as Bhagavan, Bhagyavan, full of opulences. And learning and knowledge is one of those. Other types of opulences could involve wealth, renunciation, power, beauty, strength. So in total you have six opulences which we generally refer to. Six specific attributes of the Lord. Of course the Lord has unlimited attributes, but these are at least six defining qualities that most people in this world are attempting to absorb or develop to some extent. Some people are interested in learning. Some people want to be the best scholar, just like Digvijay. Some people like to take an unusual one, renunciation. And they like to demonstrate through their exceptional austerities or exceptional levels of renunciation what a great person they are, how powerful they are. Others try to subdue others through strength, through power, through control, through exerting control over others. Some others do it through beauty. They think, I am the best, I am the most beautiful person. Everyone should move aside when I come into the room. So different people who have different levels of opulence, each of them can develop pride from this opulence, whatever it is. Others can develop it through wealth. Someone may be very wealthy, and so they may become extremely puffed up. I am wealthy, don't they know who I am? So generally we understand that when someone mentions this line, doesn't he know who I am? We know that some pride has developed. And the inevitable downfall is coming soon after. Now in spiritual life we have to learn to distinguish the negative traits from the positive aspects in everything. In terms of these opulences, we should not despise people who have these opulences. Generally people go in the opposite direction, and so as soon as they see a rich person or a person who's extremely beautiful or a person who's very knowledgeable, they will start to think negatively about this person. But the fact is that a person has these opulences because they have pleased the Lord. They have deserved those opulences either through their karma, through their pious activities, or somehow through pleasing the Lord. So the fact that they have these opulences is to be respected. It's not something to be derided. In today's world, any quality anyone demonstrates will be ridiculed by others. People don't even give governments a certain basic level of respect that they need to carry out their jobs. Every person wishes to criticize something someone has done. It is a state which is very troublesome in this age of Kali. When the basic foundation of respect is gone, and the moment we see someone possessing a little opulence, and that drives us to criticize them, that's a very sorry state. It's simply not the case that everyone needs to reduce everyone else down to a low level. That's not society. In society, everyone has facilities, strengths, weaknesses, according to their karma, according to their level of devotion to the Lord. This is the natural order of things. There are people who work hard, who earn the results in the current or in future lives. It's not our place to criticize anyone like that. So the possession of the opulences is not an issue, or shouldn't be for devotees. What is the issue is the inevitable pride that can develop. And this comes because the people who possess opulences, they may lack the required spiritual advancement. In the Bhagavad Gita it's described, Vidya Vinaya Sampane Brahmana Gavi Hastini Suni Chaiva Swapakicha Pandita Samadarshina. So the learned and also gentle Brahmana. Two qualities are described, not just learned, gentle also. That the person is not aggressively, as in this case, trying to exert their superiority by defeating others. Their expertise, their qualification comes from their private service to the Lord. And so there are different ways that this pride develops for each of these categories, but in all cases it is not desirable. We all have the tendency also to develop this. Whatever little ability we have, we are normally quite proud, and we think that no one else could do as good a job as me in this circumstance or in any circumstance. But the fact is that the world existed before we turned up. Many things happened. Many kingdoms have come and gone. Many great rulers, many devatas, many worshipable lords have come and gone. And the world will continue after us. And so there is no real need for us to think that we are now the pivotal feature that everything in the world depends on. And that people should worship me because I am doing something so important. It's a little presumptuous to become situated in that frame of mind. And the Lord doesn't like it at all. He is tremendously repelled by any display of pride from anyone. There is a nice pastime with Advaita Acharya, the first meeting of the Lord and Advaita Acharya. This is around the time of the Mahaprakash Lila. And Lord Chaitanya, once he arrived, we know Advaita Acharya had been praying for the Lord incessantly over years for the Lord to descend and deliver all the poor conditioned souls. And he had been executing many, many austerities, fasting, worshipping the Lord with tulsi, many things he was doing, calling out the names of the Lord, trying to wake him up from his yoga nidra in the spiritual world to bring him down here to save everyone. So when the Lord arrived, and at a time of his choosing, he sent his servant Ramai to go and find Advaita Acharya. So he went to his house and he said to him, "Okay, it's time now. The Lord whom you have been worshipping for all these years with great austerities is here and he's calling you. Please come." So Advaita Acharya could immediately see that something is different about this person. He already had the ecstatic symptoms of having been in the Lord's presence. And he knew there was something amazing going on. But he also wanted to test, because he said, many, many people know that I've been engaged in these austerities and engaged in these pastimes, in these austerities and penances, just to obtain the darshan of the Lord. I need to be sure that this is really the Lord that I've been worshipping. So he said, "I'm going to go and hide in this village. And you go back to the Lord and ask him to call me from where I am. And then when he displays to me his full opulence, I will know that this is my Lord." So Ramai went back, and Lord Chaitanya immediately knew where Advaita Acharya was staying. He had gone there with his wife to hide as part of this pastime. And then he came back and said to the Lord, and said to Advaita Acharya, "Look, the Lord has sent me to get you again. Please come." And at that point, Advaita Acharya went with all happiness to see the Lord. It's described his wife prepared a wonderful aarti tray to offer aarti to the Lord. And so they went to see the Lord. And from a distance, they both offered their obeisances. And then they came into the presence of the Lord. Imagine coming into the presence of Lord Chaitanya. They touched his lotus feet. And as soon as Advaita Acharya looked at the Lord, he could see everything was transformed. The whole world had disappeared. The Lord was there in full opulence with all his servants. In every corner of the universe, Advaita Acharya could see devotees worshipping the Lord with full glories. And obviously, as happens in these circumstances, Advaita Acharya was completely blown away. This is the Lord who he had been waiting to see, to take the darshan of. And now he is having this wonderful, spectacular darshan. So the Lord picked up Advaita Acharya, embraced him, and then he ordered him to dance. Now who would refuse an order like that? So Advaita Acharya started dancing. And the descriptions that are given are quite interesting. He would dance like a madman at times, according to the mood of the music. At other times he would dance more sensibly. But in any case, he was dancing out of pure ecstasy, completely transcendental to anything in this world. And he was in complete bliss. So then the Lord asked him to stop dancing. And Advaita Acharya stopped. He switched on, switched off. Just like that. And the Lord said to Advaita Acharya, "I want to give you a benediction. You've called me, what do you want?" And Advaita Acharya said, "Actually, you're here, that's all I want. You've come here to deliver these poor, fallen, conditioned souls. There's nothing else that I want." And the Lord pushed him and pushed him and pushed him. And who can resist the pushing of the Lord? So eventually Advaita Acharya said, "Okay, I have one request from you." And he said, "Please give your mercy without discrimination to everyone in this world, whether they be meat-eater, man, woman, fallen, advanced, whatever it is, give them your mercy without discrimination." And the Lord said, "Certainly I will do that." But then Advaita Acharya said, "Actually I've got a part two of my request." And he said, "But don't give your mercy to anyone who is puffed up with a sense of their own advancement, a sense of their own learning, pride, opulence. Anyone displaying these qualities should not receive your mercy. Anyone who places obstacles in the path of yourself or your devotees should not receive your mercy." And the Lord said, "Yes, so be it." And if the Lord accepted that as his instruction for the propagation of his devotional service, That is a very useful piece of information for us to know. The Lord is completely allergic, we can say, to a display of pride, opulence, or personal distinction. He's prepared to give His mercy free of charge, with no price, as the Lord did. Simply the willingness to take up Harinam. Whether one is a Malecha, meat eater, Yavana, whatever, the Lord is willing to give them that mercy, provided they have a certain level of innocence about them, and provided they are prepared to rectify their ways. But a person like this Digvijay Pandit, who is so puffed up with his own sense of self-superiority, and by all accounts is probably following standards to a much higher level than any of these Malechas, Yavanas or others, he is bereft of the chance to be delivered by the Lord. It gives us an idea just how rare and how privileged someone has to be to get the mercy of the Lord, to be delivered and saved from the bondage of material attachment. So in this last verse, the conclusion of this of the Lord's discussion pastime is that the Lord bestows His mercy upon him and cuts off all his bondage to material attachment. Now some people are a little shocked when they hear that, because the last thing they want is to be freed from their material attachment. They rather like all the little attachments that they have. Whatever it is, the little things they've accrued, either in their bank balances, in their relationships, in their schemes, in their environments, whatever it is, all that investment, they are shocked at the notion that it might be given, it might be taken away, or I may have to give it up. So it requires a great deal of mercy for someone to simply come to that stage of wanting to be detached from the bondage of material attachment. The two things are actually very connected. The bondage, the entrapping feature of this world, acts on us in direct reciprocation with our level of attachment. So sometimes we think, especially if we're fairly new, we think, I'm so fallen. I am in a lamentable condition of life. I have no qualifications for devotional service. It's okay if I have a few attachments, because after all, I'm not very advanced. So it's okay, I'll keep a few attachments. But the thing is, and the trick is, that to become advanced, we have to take the first step. The sign of advancement and detachment from bondage is that we internally, willingly let it go. It's not that externally something has to be removed from us so that we can be normal again. We have to voluntarily, through our efforts, through our sadhana, through our practice, we have to demonstrate to Krishna that I don't want this anymore, that I've had enough of it, please take it away. If we don't do that, even if the externals are removed, then what happens is, in a short while, it comes again, because the inherent propensity hasn't disappeared. So changing that inherent propensity is the process, can only be done through the process of devotional service. And that process has actually been demonstrated by this Digvijay quite well, that he first came into the association of the Lord. He heard from the Lord. In the association of the Lord and the devotees, all that is inauspicious is destroyed. That started to happen. He was advised by the great devotee, Mother Saraswati. And then he surrendered to the Lord. So he did everything right. And then the Lord decided to remove, through inspiring him to take up the path of devotional service. And as we will hear later, he changes his lifestyle completely. He no longer sees this traveling around the world and conquering as the goal of life. He becomes a transformed person. And so the Lord facilitates his internal advancement. So there are a few nice lessons that we can learn here from these verses. Just the simple behavior of this person. His great quality was that he came to see the Lord. And through the help of the devotees, he managed to obtain benefit of seeing the Lord. There were many others in Krishna's pastimes who were right next to the Lord. They couldn't perceive his greatness. And in Lord Chaitanya's case also, those who were so puffed up that they couldn't understand the Lord's greatness. But somehow, by the mercy of a devotee, some of these persons did change their ways. Some of them did make advancement. And this Digvijay Pandit was then able to use all his qualities in the service of the Lord. So this desire to cut off bondage to material attachment is one of the components of devotional progress. And we know it's one way we also assess our progress. To what extent am I attached to Krishna, and to what extent am I detached from the material world? The two do go hand in hand. It's not possible after a certain point to keep attempting to increase our material attachments and at the same time increase our spiritual advancement. It's been described that they're like two boats going in opposite directions, and we are straddling both boats. Now you can imagine what a problem that is. If we can't choose which boat to be in, one boat is attempting to go in one direction, the other is going backwards, and we are being ripped apart, tormented by this struggle. Well, that is a struggle we have to go through. We'll all be tormented by it for some time, for some period of time, until we become sufficiently purified. Or more importantly than developing specific skills or advancement, until we internally give up that desire, that hankering for name, fame, prestige, distinction, material advancement. Even just the desire to do that in the mind, and a sincere desire to do that, is what is appreciated by the Lord. He appreciated this desire in persons such as King Prataparudra. Although externally he came across as having all attachments, still Mahaprabhu knew his mind, and he waited for a suitable time for his true mind to be revealed, at which point he gave him great mercy. So one might harbor for some considerable period of time, many years, perhaps even decades, lifetimes, this desire that I desperately want to give up my attachments, and I desperately want only one thing in my life, and that is Krishna. That is Krishna and the service of the devotees. So that thought alone can actually sustain us in life through all the different ups and downs. Because we'll all go through these. In any service that anyone does, as soon as there is a tendency for a little competence to be expressed, the pride aspect also comes. And so we have to work through it. We can't just ignore it and be happy in that. We have to actively work on it and try to be free of it. Bearing in mind this very clear point that it can only happen by the mercy of the Lord. So unless we surrender to the Lord fully and properly, even if we try on our own to have this attraction to material life, even if we want it taken away, it won't be. Because actually one who has that level of detachment actually in one sense possesses great wealth. So the Lord doesn't award it very easily. His devotional service is even harder, but just to be detached from the material world is an extremely difficult thing. But hopefully if we read pastimes of Digvijay, if we understand the types of behavior that these devotees exhibit, we can actually make a lot of advancement. I'll just maybe mention just one little pastime in connection with this. There was this one person, Devananda Pandit, who would recite the Bhagavatam in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And he would recite the Bhagavatam, but he wasn't a pure devotee of the Lord. And so he would hold these discourses, he would speak on the Bhagavatam, but his conclusions would always have some Mayavad context, or it wouldn't end in devotional service. It would have some Mayavadi type conclusion. And one day, Srivas Thakur came into this class. There was a discussion on the Bhagavatam going on, and he came in and sat down in the class. And Srivas Thakur obviously was very happy to hear the Bhagavatam being spoken. He didn't consider the conclusions or anything, but he transformed into ecstasy. He became ecstatic. He started rolling around, speaking loudly. He was glorifying. He was absorbing, respecting the Bhagavatam. And then he fainted. And at that point, this Devananda Pandit said to his students, "Who is this person coming in my class causing a disturbance? Throw him out." So they picked him up and put him on the street. And this was a big offense, because Srivas Thakur is no ordinary person. And so on one occasion, Lord Chaitanya saw Devananda Pandit walking on the street. And he said to him, "Who do you think you are? Do you know what you've just done? You've just thrown out a pure devotee into the street. What an offensive thing to do. You haven't got the slightest connection with the Bhagavatam. You speak on the Bhagavatam as if you're an authority, but you haven't got the slightest understanding of its conclusions. Yet you dare to throw out a pure devotee of mine who is simply interested in pleasing me and rendering devotional service to the devotees. Who do you think you are?" So he chastised him. One of the few occasions when Lord Chaitanya directly approaches someone and gives them a good verbal chastisement. And now Devananda Pandit fortunately he had association from Vakreshwar Pandit, who was a devotee of the Lord. And initially he had been thinking, actually the Lord is junior to me. I'm older than him. How can he speak to me in this manner and tell me I don't know anything? But slowly through the association of Vakreshwar Pandit, he came round to the idea that actually this is the Supreme Lord. And yes, I've been feeling rather dry throughout my studies. I'm studying, speaking on this Bhagavatam, but I'm not feeling any ecstasy. Maybe I should actually go and apologize to the Lord and take his mercy. So he did. He had the presence of mind in that circumstance. He went to the Lord, offered his obeisances, and the Lord said, "Actually, I don't know why you're offering me obeisances. The person you have offended is Srivas Thakur. So go to him and offer him obeisances." Which of course he did. And it was happily ever after that, that he became a devotee. He started to give discourses on the Bhagavatam with full devotional conviction. And his conclusions became devotional. And it's described at that point all the devotees started to enjoy, relishing going to his classes. So Mahaprabhu has come specifically to correct people. In the sphere of learning that we've covered here, Shastric study, there are certain traits that are required for someone to delve into Shastra. It is not through academic scholarship, through expertise, through grammatical jugglery. That is not the way to enter into the books. The way has to be through parampara loyalty, through respecting the devotees, through respecting the Lord, and following the process that he has given. When we do that and we respect the purports of Srila Prabhupada, we can actually understand internally what these scriptures are all about. So I'll stop there for now. Maybe we can take some questions, comments.